Hello, welcome to the Chess Watching Podcast. With me, the Grievous Bodily Farmer. On the podcast this week, we've got commentators Matt Lunn. Say hello, Matt.
Hello. How is everyone?
I'm fine, thank you. We've also got co-commentator Chris the General Levy.
Hello. To answer the question, I'm also fine.
Good.
So it leads into the obvious topic, which is how we're coping in current circumstances, but you asked the questions, Gav.
No, it's fine.
I'm not here to interview you.
How is self-isolation going for you, Chris?
It's fine. I mean, Hackney is unusually quiet. You can't find a flat white for love nor money. The daytime illicit rave scene has fallen in with kind of the lockdown order. Otherwise, you know, I'm just sat here working on my chess and listening to reruns of commentary on the shows.
God, what a niche life it is that you lead. At once a time capsule of early 20s hipsterdom, and also something that it sounds like chess boxing is really important to you, if all of this extra time is taken up by reliving the past and working on your chess. It's kind of both quite beautiful and strangely sad.
Nothing if not professional, Matt. I like to self-critique my own performances on the mic, make a few notes, think about how I can bring more the next time. But how's it been for you? What have you been up to?
Kind of you to ask, Chris. Yeah, I mean, I've been good. I've gone into this sort of intending to work on my chess quite a lot with all of this extra time, and I'm actually off this week as well, but I'm now part of 4NCL Online. They've got 9 games taking place every Tuesday from tomorrow onwards, and I'm not playing tomorrow's match, so kind of good opportunity to sort of start prepping against some of my opponents, but instead I've been trying to build up my rating on the system that we're playing on, just so that people look at me and briefly think, God, this guy's good, isn't he, before they actually see me play, and that illusion is shattered in an instant. But my fragile ego aside, it's all good.
What is 4NCL Online, for people that might not know?
So 4NCL is a kind of, it's a big series of weekend team matches that takes place in England with ostensibly with the best teams from across the UK who play in lots of different divisions, but obviously that can't happen now, so they've set up a new online tournament on Lee Chess, which looks like a lot of fun, actually. And I know lots of people who've got into it who weren't playing it before, 4NCL that is, so hopefully it should do some good in terms of, like, you know, spreading the message in the country. So yeah, should be exciting. And then on a non-chess note, just lots of, you know, lots of social distancing, exercising with caution, spending time with my other half, and doing work, which has not actually changed as much as it might have done, which is good.
I mean, social distancing and cautious exercise sounds like it describes my normal life for me.
There's an underused joke with a sort of, you know, name of your first band, or sort of, oh yeah, no, I think I saw those guys when I was 15. And yeah, I guess one of the few good things to come out of this is the kind of the novel band names, TV shows, etc., with a kind of sly reference to everything that's gone on now.
So I suppose the chess community are clearly following the chess boxing community and trying to play more games online and virtually. We've had 3 training sessions now, I think, virtual training sessions on Saturday, and you guys were good enough to commentate on the last session. Who did we have? We had a couple of decent chess players playing each other, Chris. What did you make of that?
Oh, I mean, more than decent. We had the Northern powerhouse himself, David Jarmley, taking on German chess boxing legend André Glänzer, who was scheduled for the last show but had to pull out. He very kindly stepped up to the plate, played a couple of blitz games with David, and, you know, participated in the training as well. So his little warm-up, he was there in his study, fully track-suited from Germany, kind of doing the shadow boxing, and then he sat down and treated us along with David to an exhibition of fine attacking chess, Matt.
Yeah. No,
sorry, go on.
No, absolutely. It was firstly, like, huge compliments to you, Gavin, and the way you ran the session itself. I mean, I didn't participate. I just had my camera off and I was looking at my phone. But what I saw of it was really, really impressively done. Gavin from his garden in am I allowed to say where you live, or is it that's all right, isn't it? Yeah, good. Well, okay, yeah. From his garden in North Norfolk, conducting place, like a really.
That information, they're doing pretty well.
But yeah, conducting this training session like an absolute pro. It was it was like tuning in to sort of one of the great. It was like watching Joe Wicks, but there was also chess involved, which was delightful.
Exactly. Almost as hirsute as Joe Wicks, actually, with Gav's kind of fine sweep of hair that's got even more extensive, I suppose, in the current circumstances. Also, equally favoured by housewives, I imagine.
Yeah, well, very kind of you to say so, Chris. But yeah, the old Barnet is getting a bit out of control, and I'm sure by the time this is over, we'll be straight down to get our haircut, I'm sure. So you touched on David Jarmany there. It was his debut fight, of course, St. Patrick's Day Bash. You were both commentating on that. How did you think he fared his first time out?
I mean, he's a very, very good chess player, David. Like, I mean, by the standards of any chess player in the UK, I mean, he is literally up there with the best. Obviously, very physically fit, has been putting in a huge amount of work into his boxing, and went in with a very good level of experience for boxing for a debutant, and a staggering level of experience for the chess, which is, it's kind of rare that, you know, you have someone of Cameron Little's caliber, you know, a literal champion, potentially being the underdog against a debutant. But I guess there's such is the way that the sport works when someone is so good at one of the disciplines as David is in the chess. And I thought what made it really exciting was that actually the chess wasn't quite as smooth for David as it might have been, because Cameron played, it was a very, very sharp elephant gambit, and Cameron ended up having to sack a piece for a couple of pawns, but got a pretty serious initiative for it in that format, which meant that David had to work really, really hard for the win. And I think there were a couple of occasions where had Cameron played slightly differently, then David might have been coerced into making a mistake. But he survived in the boxing, and we did more than that. He did well in the boxing against the more experienced Cameron, and in the end, his extra experience and ability prevailed in the chess. But it was a cracking bout, and enjoyed it enormously.
Well, you say that he could have made a mistake. Actually, both fighters made a mistake. I don't know if you recall, there was quite a complex exchange, and David should have recaptured, I think, of a rook. Yeah. He missed it, but on the second attempt. So yeah. if Cameron hadn't missed that, he actually could have really caused David some problems. But it was a fascinating bout, and I thought, actually, Cameron's chess was very good. I didn't expect him to hold up so well against an excellent chess player like David. And it was really quite a compelling debut bout, I thought.
I guess it's kind of testament to the fact that if someone plays a slightly dodgy opening against you, you are playing the position rather than the person. And I think the elephant gambit is fundamentally quite fun, but it's actually not particularly good. And even though Cameron sort of didn't play it perfectly, there were enough flaws in the black position that he can always sort of generate a bit of something which poses challenges. And at that time control, and when you're interspersing the chess moves with being, you know, whacked around a boxing ring, it's always going to be fun. So, sorry, I've spoken about this one loads. Chris, what was your thought about the Northern Powerhouse's debut fight?
I mean, it was a cracking fight due to all the factors that you've alluded to. Cameron really stepping up and, you know, acquitting himself really well in the chess. Yeah, and definitely shout out to Cameron for, it shows how hard he's been training. He's quite a regular on the tournament scene, and he's really rapidly improving. Highlight for me of that bout, I think I remember commenting on it during the night, it was David Jarmany's kind of pleasingly old school fighting style. I mean, technically he was very sound, physically he was well prepared, but there was a little bit of the kind of 19th century "have at you, sir" about him. It was kind of very, quite upright. Kind of, it was, the juking sticks were out, and I could kind of imagine him in a kind of ring in a field somewhere with a few people throwing down a few guineas on a bet. He'd be wearing some breeches and kind of calling out, "Have at you, sir," at his opponent. There was something something about that. I don't know if I'm quite painting the picture as I sit here in my room kind of doing the juking signs, but that's what it was like. I really enjoyed watching it, actually.
A nice moustache together with a bald head would have been the complete picture there.
Yeah, it could be part of his ring persona, I think. I'd like to see him exploring that direction in future.
Like something out of Peaky Blinders.
Oh, definitely, because he had that quite moody look to him in the entrance. And actually, that's one thing I'd like to bring up again about the last event, was just how strong all the entrances were. But David's, he kind of had this kind of brooding, northern, dark, satanic Mills feeling to him. It was very good to behold.
He looked a bit like, I forgot his name now, that actor who played The Godfather. Marlon Brando, yeah. If you look at young Marlon Brando and then you look at David as he came out with that stare, you barely could tell the difference.
Yeah, he'll thank you for caveating that with the word young Brando, I'm sure. Chris, fair play. That was a couple of really, really terrific scenelets that you just sort of created for us there. I just dark satanic Mills, you know, this sort of pugilistic imagery is one of the reasons I thoroughly enjoy commentating with you. I think that was an absolute joy to watch and to commentate on. And then I then stepped out of the ring, and you were joined by the excellent Terry Marsh, who had a sort of slightly less high caliber fight to commentate on, didn't he, Chris?
It took a slightly different direction, that one. But oddly, actually, we'll come back to the fight in a second. But oddly, I've been working on my commentary game quite a lot, not just preparing the chess, but I thought I'll just start watching some classic boxing fights on weekends. And I cracked down on YouTube. It was Eubank versus Ben One from 1990, a classic ITV broadcast. And there, Jim Rosenthal was, commentary legend, icon of mine. I definitely try and star myself on Jim. He was introducing who was there in the crowd. Camera panned around and it zoomed in on Terry Marsh himself. Like Terry Marsh, very popular in these parts. And I'm sure we'll be seeing him in the ring again. So personal highlight was actually also getting to sit next to a true boxing legend such as Terry and hear his thoughts, not just on his boxing career, but for example, the similarities between boxing and chess, I thought was fascinating.
And of course, Terry Marsh is not just a boxing legend, he's also a chess boxing legend and a title holder himself. He has had two fights for us, and he beat Dima Agasarian to win the WCBA world title. I guess it would be welterweight, isn't it?
Yeah.
So shout out to Terry Marsh. Also, you mentioned the intro, Northern Powerhouse's intro, which was excellent. Shout out to Kate Gilbert, who's been working with a lot of the intros for the fighters. I think there was another standout intro as well. For you, Chris, what was a standout intro aside from David Jarmany?
Oh, Gav, I mean, let's talk about Sax, baby. Brian Mack, a very talented individual. Chess and boxing is not itself sufficient to challenge this man. He speaks God knows how many languages, seven or something like that.
Seven, I believe.
I believe he finished his schooling at the age of 14 and went on to take a degree in classical piano. And then his little side hobby is just playing the sax. And he came out and treated us to a live rendition in full boxing garb of the definitive sax solo, Rafferty's Baker Street. The crowd were in raptures. I don't know what you thought of that, man.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I think anyone who has the cojones to go out in front of a crowd of, you know, slightly drunk, very excitable Londoners, and just sort of give it a whirl on the saxophone, particularly as you mentioned, such a well-known solo. I mean, for many of us, Jerry Rafferty's Baker Street is pretty much the only well-known saxophone solo. It's like the sort of like Fleetwood Mac's The Chain. It's sort of what you think of as a certain type of melody. And not only do it, but to do it with such aplomb and such joy before then going and then switching your brain and playing some chess and then switching it yet again for the boxing. So no, that was just spectacular, and a huge admiration for Brian for doing that. Like truly one of the great polymaths of the chess boxing world.
And I think the whole thing was so chess boxing. There was absolutely no one in that 400 people packed out crowd who expected that to happen. And that's what you get when you come to chess boxing. There's always something that you weren't quite expecting. And we just layer on entertainment after entertainment. And I think that was really what it was all about. And yeah, thanks to Brian for doing that. Hopefully we'll get to see him play maybe even a different instrument next time he comes out. I know he's keen to get back in the ring.
It doesn't mean triangle.
That's perhaps, yeah.
Can we wheel him out maybe with a full-size grand piano? I mean, that would be sort of pure Vegas style. Forget Tyson Fury being born into the crowd with like on an actual throne. Let's have Brian being wheeled out by a harem, which is also something that we can discuss regarding another entrance.
You know, talking about piano, actually, I don't know if you know, but Peter Crowley is a keen piano player. I don't know if you've ever, perhaps you didn't join us, I think, last year, was it year before, we had a bit of a pub crawl and we went into a pub and Peter just sat down and started playing Seven Seas of Rye, all these classic piano tunes. So there's another opportunity for a little bit of entertainment for an intro as well.
Let's get them to fight each other. Mac, the actuator, and then they can play a duet. And that's their entrance.
They're going to be poorly matched on all disciplines and weight, so about that.
Other than musical ability.
Other than musical ability. We should talk about Brian's fight, though, because this is the first fight he's won. I don't know if you know that, guys. He's had three fights. His first fight he's won. And I think there was a real contrast, boxing and chess. How did you think that went, Matt?
Yeah, so Dan Mayfield played the English against Brian Mack. And I heard on the previous podcast he talked about the English maybe not being the opening for him. I think it's an interesting one because, yeah, it can be a very, very attritional way of playing. And there was a specific line where Brian played an early pawn to c6, so the queen's bishop pawn one square forward. And White has to play d4, two squares in front of the queen, in order to prevent Black from getting a massive centre. But I think kind of, obviously, you're in blitz mode. Dan just insta-played something. Brian played d5 and just kind of quite quickly generated this really, really crushing position whereby his pieces were just all on amazing squares. He had this huge centre. And it's exactly the sort of thing that you don't want in chess boxing, because there's no way to kind of mix up the position slightly. And there's lots of ways in which your opponent can improve whilst you have to constantly find ideas that don't make your position worse. So it's easy to kind of get into time trouble and to let your position kind of, you know, ebb away slightly. But then there was a very pleasing contrast with the boxing, Chris.
I think it's what you want. You either want that kind of tight on a knife edge in both disciplines, or you want the one where both fighters establish their respective advantages in different disciplines very early on. And in this case, you know, you have to feel a bit sorry for both fighters, I think, when you're talking about this one, because we did have a late dropout. I think, was it Brian's or someone's original opponent had to pull out due to illness on the evening itself, and they ended up kind of very nobly agreeing to fight each other. But there's a slight, I think, weight disparity between the two of them And Dan is also a very aggressive fighter, which I love watching him fight. I mean, as much as I appreciate kind of good technique, not that I'm saying Dan's is bad, but like kind of attention to the technique, you know, kind of very proper, let's dance around the outside, let's flick out the jab every now and then, and very classical boxing. As much as I like that, I also like the kind of Dan's very aggressive approach of just laying into you from the off. And I think, yeah, that really took Brian back aback, as it were, very, very early on. And he didn't really know how to respond to that. He was floored a couple of times in the first round, and I think he was a bit gun-shy as a result, but held in there. I think a lot of people, after you've been down on the canvas a couple of times, happens again, you might be tempted just to, you know, stay on there a bit if you're on the receiving end of it. But Brian just kept dusting himself down, gradually eased himself a bit into the fight, you know, adapted his tactics a little bit, and his chest saw him through in the end. So it was kind of classic tale of kind of going against adversity, but huge credit to Dan for the exhibition of boxing, certainly.
Yeah, I think, thanks to all our fighters, we wouldn't have been able to put the show on otherwise. I think Dan, I'm trying to encourage Dan to sort of lean into this kind of anti-hero, because I think we need all types of characters in chess boxing, and certainly a name like the Taxman would lend itself to a bit of an anti-hero. And I don't know if either of you listened to the podcast we had Dan on last week. Did you get to listen to that, Chris?
I got to listen. Dan very kindly highlighted some of the comments on the Twitch feed. I was actually quite honoured. I mean, it's a sign that, you know, people are paying attention. Think about Trump, Katie Holmes, Piers Morgan. I aspire to this level of online antagonism. So I'm really quite honoured that I've kind of become a bit of an icon, because what was it? Chris Levy is a terrible chess player. And I think there were comments about my lack of physical conditioning as well that were perhaps not repeatable on a family podcast such as this one.
So, yeah, I wouldn't, I'm sure you wouldn't be the only focus of any kind of abuse. There'll be all kinds of things on there, I have no doubt at all.
If there's trolling, then there's a logical way that they said, I mean, you see these kind of things about now journalists or even some fighters, they kind of meet their troll in the end. I remember there was I'm in no way likening myself to Deontay Wilder, but I think if you look this up, that's in chess ability only. If you Google it, you can see there's somebody who's trolling early career Deontay Wilder, who then challenged him to come and settle their scores in the gym. So maybe my chess trolls, we can settle our scores over the board. If they want to bring the chess, then yeah, I'm open to meeting the fans.
And that's it for this week. We've got the second part of this interview for you next week. Take care.